Hi there, we are James and Dan, two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available. But if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be talking all things Middlesbrough. How much longer will Jonathan Woodgate last at Middlesbrough? Will the patience run thin if the bad results continue? We'll also be talking a bit about Derby. Wayne Rooney hasn't even arrived permanently yet, and Philip Cocu has already had a pretty eventful start to life as the Derby manager. We're also talking a little bit about Reading. Mark Bowen, when he was appointed, was met with a whole host of negativity, but things look to be turning around for the Royals. We'll also be talking a little bit about Neil Warnock after he left Cardiff a couple of days ago, and a bit on Preston as well. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp here on the Championship Fan Show. So plenty to come over the next hour. Remember that number again, 0208 7020 558. If you want to share your views, obviously this is the Championship Fan Show dedicated to all 24 of the Championship clubs every weekday afternoon between 2 and 3. So make sure you get in touch with us this afternoon. As I mentioned, the clubs we're going to focus on this afternoon, Middlesbrough, Derby and Reading. So that's our focus this afternoon. But I wanted to start with an interview that the Preston manager, Alex Neil, has done. It's on the BBC Sport website if you would like to go and have a read of it. And a couple of really interesting points that Alex Neil makes. Remember when he got sacked by Norwich, his reputation wasn't exactly in a particularly good state, was it? And then he went back to Scotland. He's come back to Preston and has done a very good job there over the last 18 months, was linked with the job at West Brom towards the tail end of last season when Darren Moore lost his job. Stoke had approached him, but I think it would have been incredibly unlikely for him to have left the club that are second in the Championship for the club right down near the bottom. And there are an interesting kind of few different topics that he talks about. Firstly, he talks about his principles being old-fashioned. He says, also talking about the low budget that he's been on. He's working on one of the lowest budgets in the Championship at Preston. In his first season, he led them to seventh, missing out on the playoffs by just 2 points. They did finish 14th last season, which was seemingly a bit of a step back, although for some people maybe it was a step forward, doing better than maybe you would expect from them. He's had to sell some of his best players. In his first season, Preston sold Jordan Hugill to West Ham for £9 million. Last season, Greg Cunningham went to Cardiff. In the most recent transfer window, Sheffield United, who were promoting to the Premier League, took Callum Robinson with them. So what Alex Neil has had to deal with is players, some of his best players, moving on and then not getting the money really to replace them. Despite having a billionaire owner, Preston has spent no more than a total of £2 million on transfer fees each season Neil has been there. And also the average age of those that he has signed is under the age of 24. Some of the things that he says, that's not difficult if I'm being honest. My principles are pretty much old-fashioned nowadays, but I've got morals, principles, standards, work ethic, all those types of things. If you give lads an opportunity from lower levels, you can find that quite easily. Because those lads are really hungry, they've had to work for everything they've got to get to the point they're at. They've never been handed anything, they've never been pampered, they've never got the type of money that makes your belly full where you don't really want to work that extra bit. So we talked earlier in the Premier League fan show about Mauricio Pochettino being under constraints and Daniel Levy not necessarily backing him in the transfer window in the way that he'd have hoped. Well, Alex Neil doesn't spend a lot of money and often has to sell players in windows, and yet seems to get more out of his players. And also, talking about going into the lower leagues, you get players that haven't come through kind of top Premier League academies and therefore have had to put that extra yard in, really. They've had to try that bit harder. They've had to go through tougher times in order to get to where they're at, and that makes them perhaps hungrier. I wouldn't necessarily say that's a criticism of all players that have come through Premier League academies and are playing Premier League football, but that there is that benefit of bringing players up from the lower leagues who've had to work through times where maybe they'd have been semi-pro, where they wouldn't have necessarily been earning a huge amount of money. They've had to fight for every little bit and fight to move up every single level, and that makes them perhaps more valuable assets when they get to the Championship. He also talks about how he's had to improve as a manager, and a lot of players at Preston speak of his attention to detail, his analysis against opponents, and also his crystal clear instructions. He also talks about how he relishes the tactical side of management. Perhaps no surprise then that you hear players talk about his work he does off the field ahead of games. I think I've had to improve, is what he explains. Going up against guys like that, like Nuno Espirito Santo, Daniel Farker, Chris Wilder, Marcelo Bielsa, you have to put a lot of thought into the process. But more importantly, you've got to take it from your head and put it into the players' heads. It's all right you knowing everything, but it's making them understand how to do it at breakneck speed when it's happening in a game. I don't like the word philosophy. Our style of play varies depending on the opposition, depending on the players we've got available. I think that's certainly one thing I've learned, is to be more adaptable. And it obviously you focus on yourself mostly as to how you're going to get the best out of your players. But, and this is the difficult thing when you're playing 46 games in a season, you're playing so often, it's not necessarily the easiest thing in the world to be able to constantly slightly tweak your approach to each opponent that you're playing, because the games just come thick and fast. But quite clearly, Alex Neil puts in a huge amount of effort to not only with his own players get across what he wants his players to do, but also analysing finer details with his opposition. And that's maybe why Preston find themselves in this position this season where they are second in the table. He also talks about one thing that we were mentioning in regards to Eddie Howe as to whether if he was called Eduardo Houdini, which is what Mr. Patrick Christie's often says, that if he had a foreign name, then he would be more in with a chance of getting a top six job. He believes a fancy name doesn't make you better. The top tiers in English football were once awash with Scottish managers, plenty of them, but we're not really seeing that anymore. He also says foreign ownership is a big part of that, and he dismisses the suggestion that Scottish coaches, along with the national team, have fallen behind in their technical and tactical expertise at the elite end of the game. He says, I think the exotic foreign name sometimes catches the eye rather than John Smith round the corner. I'm sure John Smith would be offended by that. I think sometimes that can prove to be difficult to get the really key jobs to give you the opportunity to become a manager. I do think things happen in waves. There's been an influx of German managers coming over, certainly to England. Before that, I think it was Italian coaches, so it wouldn't surprise me if it came back round and Scottish coaches do get an opportunity. It does feel like at the moment that the in thing is getting a foreign manager in rather than sticking to these managers. I think he may have a point that these things always happen in cycles. It's like when we talk about whether the English clubs are going to dominate the Champions League. Different countries dominate at different times. Sometimes it's the Spanish club, sometimes it's the Italian club, sometimes it's the German clubs. Now it seems like it is the English turn for that. That these things always happen in cycles, that it's not always the case. You're not always going to have managers from certain places. Sometimes it really does vary, but there is that feeling, and it's going down into the Championship as well. You look at Daniel Farker, who's taken Norwich up, Nuno Espirito Santo, that's taken Wolves up, that the foreign managers seem to be the in thing, but Alex Neil's view is that in the near future that might change, and in the next few years we might see things turn around, and it may be the British coaches that come more into it. You see the likes of Chris Wilder, Eddie Howe, Sean Dyche in the Premier League. Maybe we're going to see a real influx in British coaches. Danny Cowley has been kind of promoted into the championship this season. So maybe we are going to see more British managers given the opportunity over the next couple of years. What's your view on that? Should more British coaches be given the opportunity at the Premier League and the Championship level? Call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. After the break, we'll be talking all things Middlesbrough.
Love Sport.
Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Middlesbrough now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Dominic Shaw, Borough Editor at Teesside Live. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Dominic. So looking back at the last result just before the international break, a 2-2 draw away at QPR. Borough had failed to score in the previous four games. They did manage to get two in this game. What were your reactions after that draw at QPR?
They played well, Borough. They were it was certainly an improvement, although they haven't been playing badly of late. They haven't been playing particularly well in some games, but the recent chunk of games between international breaks has certainly been more heartening in terms of performances than the previous chunk, which included the defeats to Birmingham and Sheffield Wednesday, which were particularly alarming. The problem has been, as you pointed out there, that Borough haven't been able to score goals, so they've tightened up, they've moved to a wing-back system and they don't look as vulnerable at the back, but that has come at a cost of not looking as threatening going forward. At QPR, it was kind of back to front in that they did look more threatening going forward. They got those couple of goals. They could have had a couple more, but they conceded two sloppy, cheap goals that Woodgate will be disappointed about. It's you can't get away from the fact they haven't won in nine now and the position in the table. But Woodgate will certainly, and the fans, I think, will certainly be a little more upbeat after that performance than they have been in the weeks before that.
Both goals, Dominic, came from Britt Asombalonga. He's up to 6 goals for the season now. Do you think there's too big an emphasis on his shoulders at the moment, or is it simply a case of the fact that other players around him aren't being clinical enough? The next highest goal scorer, that's of Ashley Fletcher and Paddy McNair on 2 goals. Which way would you lean on that? Too big an emphasis on Asombalonga, or not enough other players stepping up to the plate?
I think a bit of both. They are over reliant on Asombalonga. There's no doubt about that. I looked this week and I think he scored 46% of Borough's league goals. You mentioned there that Fletcher's got 2, but one of those was in the cup. His only league goal was on the opening night at Luton. McNair has been Borough's best player this season, got a couple of goals, but Woodgate said on the record earlier this season that he wants 10 from him. You need more from the likes of Lewis Wing, Marcus Tavernier, George Saville when he plays. That Marcus Brown, who they brought in the summer, that they all need to chip in. And the defenders as well. Paddy McNair's set pieces are excellent. So the likes of Danny Ayala, Dale Fry, Ryan Schott and George Friend, now he's back in the side, they should be causing problems in getting goals. Asombalonga hasn't looked, Jonathan Woodgate's made a big thing this season about how he's backing for Brit. He says over and over and over again. He actually said at the weekend, I know I'm repeating myself here, but he's my number 9, I'll back him. He's my first choice centre forward. That is the complete opposite to the approach taken by Tony Pulis last season, who, to be honest, called him out more often than not about missing chances and saying that he needs more from him. So it's kind of that tough love, arm around the shoulder, opposite approaches. When you look at which is working better, I think what it comes down to is the team still isn't properly set up to get the best out of Asombalonga. Because of this search to kind of find the balance between being solid defensively and attacking going forward. Mark Warburton, we spoke to after the game on Saturday, and he briefly managed Brit at Nottingham Forest, and he was saying that a fully firing Asombalonga is as good as any player in the Championship. And, his goal record in recent seasons is unrivalled. He scored 15 goals last season, and he had absolutely no right to score that many goals in a Tony Pulis team that was designed to not get the best out of Asombalonga, to be honest. It was a thankless task playing up front on your own in that team. He will score goals. He'll miss chances. He's not as clinical as you probably expect him to be when you look at his record. He will miss chances. And I think the problem is that Borough aren't creating 3, 4, 5 chances for him a game. If you do, he'll get 1 or 2 goals. They're creating 1 or 2 chances. And I think the problem is that increases the pressure on Asombalonga, because he knows if he misses a chance, that might well be the only chance he gets. But he was excellent on Saturday. That was as good as he's been this season. He got the 2 goals. He could have had more. And He was full of running. Ashley Fletcher played up alongside him, and they have a good understanding. And the challenge for Borough and for Woodgate is making that the weekly norm for us on Belonga.
After the game, manager Jonathan Woodgate praised his team's steely determination in the draw at QPR. How do you take something like that? Because ultimately, football is a results-driven business, and at the moment, Middlesbrough are struggling. They're in the relegation zone. Do you think that's a positive sign going forward, that even in a bit of a rut, that the players are still giving everything, the commitment's still there? Or do you think at some point that novelty wears off, that just showing kind of a commitment, showing determination at some point has to ultimately produce results?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't think there's any questioning really that the players are playing for Woodgate. There's only been a couple of dismally poor performances, and they were the ones that I mentioned against Sheffield Wednesday and Birmingham. In this recent chunk of games, they lost at home to West Brom, but were very much in that game and deserved a point. They should have beaten Huddersfield away. Fulham at home, they were on top, and then again, Fulham got a man sent off. They should have won that. Derby, George Savile got sent off, so that changes the game. So the point that Woodgate's making, there's a lot of fans, you know, who perhaps have made their mind up on Woodgate already and don't want to hear it, but the players are playing for him, and it's just coming down to those fine margins of games. Now, I know every manager at every level can say that, but commitment's certainly not an issue. It's as simple as being able to put the ball in the back of the net, and if one or two chances, and I'm talking, you know, gilt-edged, clear-cut chances. I don't know if you've seen it, but, you know, the chance Ashley Fletcher missed at Huddersfield, where if you give him that 100 times, it was harder to miss than score, and you'd back him to put it in 99 times out of 100. It's those sorts of things that have just gone against Borough, really. Now, that's not to say that they should be riding high in the Championship, because they've clearly got their issues that need dealing with. But I see where Woodgate's coming from when he says, and this is the feeling above the manager as well at the club, that the performances have merited better results than they've got, and they should be slightly higher up the table.
As you mentioned earlier, Dominic, it's now 9 games without a win for Borough. The pressure is building on Jonathan Woodgate. How much longer will the patience and faith in a club legend last? Because I spoke to you, Dominic, a few weeks ago, and you said that there still very much remains that backing to the manager from fans and the hierarchy, that they are going to continue to back him. But how much longer, if they're still in this situation, how much longer do you think that patience will last? Will, over these next few months, will they start considering whether, even though they would love for it to have worked, when will they start considering, actually, maybe this isn't working, we need a change?
I mean, if, you know, the 9 games without a win now, if you were to get to, say, 15 or 16 games without a win, and the league table is still looking as ominous as it is now, then obviously there's a decision there to be made. But the word coming out of the club at the minute from the top is that, as I mentioned there, that performances have been better than results show. You know, we believe in Jonathan. We believe in what he's trying to do, and the positive signs are there. They know that the club know that the squad's unbalanced and it needs strengthening in January. Obviously, doing that in January is easier said than done. And the dilemma the club may well face in January is, you know, there's been this commitment to signing players for the future and kind of changing the recruitment approach, but, you know, come that window when you're 5 months away from the end of the season, if you're still in bother at the bottom of the table, you might well need a here and now fix. So that's a dilemma they might well face in January. But I think a lot of that depends on the 9 games between now and the start of the window. But as I said, the feeling from the club at the minute is certainly that there's no sign whatsoever of them pressing the panic button, and that's, you know, even if one or two results don't go the way, I don't see that changing. However, the next 2 games are Hull and Barnsley at home, and they are then followed by, I think, 3 of the next 4 games are away at Leeds, Nottingham Forest and Swansea. So you look at those 2 games, Hull and Barnsley, I mean, 4 points is an absolute, absolute minimum. But I personally think they need to be taking 6 from those games.
Inevitably, and you touched on it there, Dominic, at this stage, people look towards the January transfer window. Do you think funds will be made available to Jonathan Woodgate, or if they do decide to make that change in the next couple of months, another manager? And is there a risk? I saw potentially rumours that Daniel Ayala have been linked with a move to Leeds. Is there a concern that maybe a few other clubs will be looking at some of Borough's players and they might have a fight on their hands to keep hold of them in January?
Well, the problem they've got with with the likes of Ayala is the six senior players, first team players, or certainly five of them are. Danny Ayala, George Friend, Johnny House, Marvin Johnson, Ryan Schott and Rudy Gestede. Gestede being the one who's out on the fringes, really. But they're all out of contract next summer. Now, several of those players are among the club's highest earners, and it's no secret that Borough are looking to cut costs and to trim the wage bill. In an ideal world, they'd like to keep some of those players, certainly Ayala, Friend, probably Housen, Ryan Shotton. He was written off by a lot of fans, but he's a solid, consistent performer who's done well for Borough this season, although he's injured now. Woodgate said on the record that decisions on those players won't be made until later in the season, which is understandable, really, when you consider the position they're in the table. But obviously, that then leads to inevitable speculation. And the likes of Ayala and Friend, who've been such solid, consistent performers in the Championship for a number of years, there's always going to be clubs interested. Ayala, for me, it'd be an excellent signing for any Championship club. He's in the year when Borough went up under Aitor Karanka, he was playing alongside Ben Gibson, but Ayala, for me, was the best defender in the division that season. It's been a bit up and down for him since then, and he is susceptible to getting his injuries, but he's rock solid in there at the heart of the defence. So that speculation's inevitable. I think what please Woodgate is the likes of Ayala, Friend and Housen are as professional as they come, and they're not likely to get distracted by this speculation and whatever's going on there. Regardless of what's going on there, Borough need the strength, and Woodgate said after the summer window that there were two or three players short, and that's been clear. Attacking, it's going forward, really. There's no real competition for Brittas Ombolonga, as we touched on earlier. I know there's Ashley Fletcher, but he's tended to play kind of off Brit or off the left or in a number 10 role. And they're still desperately short on wingers and kind of attacking midfielders. That's why Woodgate really has gone to this 3-5-2 system. He made it clear that he wanted to play a different shape, but he doesn't really have the players to do it. So there's no doubt he wants to strengthen. Will funds be made available? I mean, I think a lot of it depends on where they are in the table. If the league position looks as ominous as it does now, then Borough and the club, although they are trying to cut costs, will do everything in the power to get them out of the mess in the league. As I said, I think those nine games between now and the start of the window will determine what Borough do and how they do it.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Dominic. That was Dominic Shaw, Borough editor at Teesside Live. We'll be back after this.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. We're going to be talking a little bit about Derby and Reading to come later in the hour. Just a bit of breaking news to bring you from the world of the Premier League, and it is the news that Bernardo Silva has been suspended for one first-team match and fined £50,000 for his tweet relating to teammate Benjamin Mendy. So he will not be able to play in the next game for Manchester City, as well as completing a face-to-face education after admitting a breach of FA Rule E3. So that's the news that Bernardo Silva has been suspended for one first-team match and fined £50,000 for his tweet relating to teammate Benjamin Mendy. We're going to be talking about Derby. They had a pretty significant game last weekend against Nottingham Forest, which they did lose 1-0. And talking about managers dealing with off-field issues, well, Philip Cocu has had to deal with plenty himself from obviously the drink driving incidents surrounding Mason Bennett and Tom Lawrence, Richard Keogh being sacked, and there potentially are further repercussions through Richard Keogh sacking, or suing, sorry, the club for sacking him. So he's had to deal with so much, and also the circus that is coming with Wayne Rooney. He has been in Derby the last few weeks at their training ground ahead of his move. Obviously, his season has ended with DC United out in the MLS and joining as a player coach in January. And as the old phrase goes, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Well, we say that, but with all the stories they've had in recent weeks and months, maybe Wayne Rooney coming to the club isn't exactly the most ideal thing for them, because we know about the spotlight that he brings, that if it works out, it could be an absolute masterstroke. For example, for Derby last season with Frank Lampard as the manager. But if this doesn't go so well, then it could be an absolute disaster, really, for Derby, because we know that Wayne Rooney during his career sometimes has been in the headlines for the right reasons, and other times has most certainly not been on the front pages for the right reasons. So it really could go one of two polar opposite ways, if we're being brutally honest. It could be something absolutely, an absolute masterstroke by Mel Morris to bring Wayne Rooney to the club. On the other hand, it could be an absolute disaster, and yet another thing that Philip Cocu is having to deal with. As I mentioned, Richard Keogh is planning to sue the club after his sacking, and I think he can feel quite unjustified for and quite hard done by, but because he was sacked. Because even though In the statement they put out, he did bring the club into disrepute by their captain being involved in something like this, the fact that his teammates have been charged with drink driving, and yet they're still at the club, it's a case of the fact that he's injured for the next 15 months and he's in his 30s, and that feels like the reason why they've got rid of him, just looking for a way to potentially push him out of the door. So that story is most certainly not going away for Derby. They're 16th after 16 games on 21 points. But Derby are a case in point of how inconsistent the Championship has been and how crazy a league it is. Because you would say in their first 16 games, Derby have had a pretty poor start to the season. They've only won 5 of their opening 16 games. But on 21 points, they're only 7 behind Bristol City in 6th. That is utterly remarkable that Derby, who've been so inconsistent, you look at their last 5 games. This is an absolute case in point. Loss, win, loss, win, loss. So that just tells you everything you need to know about the Championship. That Derby, granted they are 16th, so not in a great position in the table, but all it would take is a couple of wins and suddenly they would jettison themselves into a position where they are hovering just outside the playoff position. So things can turn around dramatically in this league. But for Philip Cocu, it has not been an easy transition into the Derby management scene. Obviously, took over from Frank Lampard when he went to Chelsea. You have to factor in the fact that they don't have Mason Mount, Harry Wilson or Fikayo Tomori on loan this season. They've had players like Graham Shinney, who was injured initially and was brought in by a different manager on a free transfer from Aberdeen. Christian Billick was one of the big money signings from Charlton over the summer. That there's been quite a lot of change at Derby this season. So things were never going to be easy for Philip Cocu. And that's without all the off-field distractions and a certain man married to Agatha Christie coming in January. It's not an ideal situation. You wonder how that dynamic is going to work between Philip Cocu and Wayne Rooney, and how Wayne Rooney's role is going to develop. Is it going to be predominantly as a player to begin with and just a few little bits in a coaching capacity? Or is it going to be a completely dual role where he does the same in both roles? Or is it a case of he's going to play less and less and actually take on more of the coaching responsibilities? That will unfold next year. But it does feel like it is going to be yet another off-field issue that Philip Cocu is going to have to deal with is the spotlight that obviously is brought onto the club with Wayne Rooney, one of the most well-known footballers on the planet, coming to the club. It isn't exactly an ideal situation for Philip Cocu to be in this type of a situation. So not easy for them, and losing to Nottingham Forest by one goal to nil away from home. It was Lewis Graben that scored the winner for Forest. Not the ideal situation. Can you imagine the boost that the club would have received had Philip Cocu's men won away at Forest? That would have been a really significant moment. You look at Derby's fixtures post the international break. It starts at home, a tough one at home against Preston, who are currently sat second in the Championship table. Then in midweek, they have a tough trip to Craven Cottage to take on Fulham. And then they play QPR at home the weekend after. So two of the next three are at home. And as I mentioned, the nature of the Championship table so far this season means that Derby, a couple of wins, and suddenly they're in the conversation about promotion. That realistically, West Brom have only really been the consistent side. They've lost once all season. They're the only consistent side amongst a very inconsistent bunch. And for Derby, who've had a poor start to the season, just a couple of wins over the next few games could suddenly jettison them up about six or seven places. So Philip Cocu's had a lot to deal with. I mean, he admitted that the fallout from Richard Keogh's sacking has been a distraction and has affected the team. But he does also say that Wayne Rooney's early involvement at Derby ahead of his move in January has given everyone a boost prior to him obviously officially joining up with the squad. But as I mentioned, Richard Keogh is planning to sue the club, which is the last thing that Philip Cocu will need after what's been a pretty tumultuous start to the season. As I mentioned, you look through the Championship table at the moment, it is just so congested. And we've asked a number of our guests over the last few weeks as to the reason why. Is it because the overall standard in the Championship has gone up, or is it that there are more average sides? And I think the general consensus is that the overall quality has dropped, that the Championship isn't as good this season. That's why you're seeing a concertina effect. You're seeing so many teams really bunched up together. As I mentioned, the gap between West Brom in first to Derby in 16th after 16 games is only 12 points. That is a remarkable statistic. That West Brom, we spoke to Joe Chapman yesterday about it, and the only frustration maybe for Slaven Bilic's side is that they're not further ahead, that they've only lost one game in 16, and whilst everyone else has been struggling with inconsistency, they haven't quite pulled away. They're only 2 points clear of Preston and Leeds, 4 points ahead of Swansea, 5 points ahead of Forest and Bristol City, that maybe they could be 5, 6, 7 points clear at the top of the table if they converted a few more of those draws. You're thinking against the likes of Charlton and Barnsley, games that West Brom should realistically have been winning, that if they had won a few of those games, then they would really have a significant gap at the top of the table. But as I mentioned, for Derby, they've had a very inconsistent start to the season. However, things can change around quite dramatically, and all they need, I mean, it's ridiculous to say this, if they won two or three games on the bounce, they'd probably rise about 7 or 8 places, which shouldn't really be the case 16 games in. However, I think what we will see post this international break, the next 5 or 6 games, I think after that period, I think we will know where the trajectory of the different teams, who's going to be in the fight for an automatic playoff position, automatic promotion spot, who's going to be in the playoff running, and who's in the argument to get relegated. I think the next 5 or 6 games should clear that up. Having said that, I'll probably be completely wrong, and we'll still be in this same situation in a month's time, talking about how inconsistent most sides are and wondering when teams are actually going to get on a run. As I mentioned, Derby's last 5 games, loss, win, loss, win, loss. So as we can expect, Derby will win the next game at home against Preston, because that's how the Championship season is going. Obviously, in the last few days, we've had another managerial change, and it was the news that Neil Warnock had stepped down, had resigned as the Cardiff manager. He had already admitted back in May that this was going to be his last season in charge of Cardiff, and It begged the question for me a couple of months ago, is that really the right situation to go into a season knowing that this is your final season? And he also admitted that if the right man was found, he would step aside. I don't think that it's ideal to question whether someone's committed to the club. And I was just wondering whether at the beginning of the season that was the case. But Neil, despite the fact the club wanted him to stay until at least Christmas, he decided he needed to step aside, that there needs to be a new voice at Cardiff. He's perhaps drained by the last 12 months, which he's openly admitted has been his hardest 12 months in management throughout his career, which obviously started at the beginning of the year with the awful tragic events of the death of Emiliano Sala. That was one, he said, the hardest 24 hours in his footballing career. And so it's been a draining 12 months for Neil Warnock. And he steps aside, and ultimately and inevitably, the question moves on to who will be the man to replace him. Lots of names have been mentioned. Yesterday, Chris Hughton's name was being bandied around. Neil Harris seems to be the front runner. Obviously, he resigned from Millwall only a matter of weeks ago after just over 4 years in charge at the Den. He is the front runner. Currently, Lee Bowyer is in the running after doing a solid job. Charlton currently 11th in the Championship table. Michael Flynn in Newport County is another name. Tony Pulis has ruled himself out of contention, obviously not necessarily definitively saying that he would have taken that job, but it will be interesting who Cardiff go with. As I mentioned, Neil Harris is currently the favourite for that job. I wouldn't be surprised if Cardiff are looking at Chris Hughton, who is still available, still out of a job, having left Brighton at the end of last season. So an interesting position, Cardiff. They're currently 14th, but I think it would be a tempting offer to a number of managers. Interesting to see whether Lee Bowyer, for example, if they seriously go after him, would he be tempted? I think he would, even though kind of he quite clearly really enjoys his job at Charlton. The constraints he's under at the club means that I think he would be tempted by a move to Cardiff. So who is going to be the next Cardiff manager to replace Neil Warnock? If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. We want to hear your views, not just on that, but any other Championship matter. Up next, we'll be talking all things Reading.
Love Sport.
So we're going to be talking all things Reading. It's been a turnaround, really, for the Royals. A matter of weeks ago, they were sacking José Gomes and things looked pretty bad. And then Mark Bowen was announced and there was a lot of negativity surrounding that appointment. But fast forward a few weeks, and it's a miracle how football can suddenly turn around. I'm sure our next guest is feeling a bit chirpy about life than he was just a matter of weeks ago. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Mark Mayo from the Tilehurst End Reading podcast. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Mark. As I mentioned, when he was first appointed, moving from sporting director to head coach, there wasn't a lot of positivity. I'm guessing that has turned around significantly.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, by the way. It's a very interesting scenario when your sporting director, I suppose, is, you could say, accused of sacking the manager and hiring himself. But the club are very keen to say that it was the Chinese owner who decided that, firstly, José Gomes had his time, and secondly, that Mark Bowen was the man to move forward with the club. And I was quite confused at the time it happened, more to do with the fact that the owner had decided that he wanted as minimum disruption as possible. And typically when a team's in the relegation zone, you actually don't really mind there being a bit of disruption. But yeah, Mark Bowen's come in, and I must admit, what I wanted at the time was a manager with good Championship experience who knew how to, you know, get the best out of those tricky games against teams that are going to fight against you. And I didn't necessarily think Mark Bowen was going to be that man, but he's proved to be exactly that. He's pragmatic. He turns up to games with slightly different styles each time. He sometimes pulls his players forward, knocks them back, and generally speaking, we just seem to be a team with a bit more organisation about us now.
Well, on the weekend, it was a 3-0 home win against Luton. Four games unbeaten then for Mark Bowen as he starts life as the Reading manager. Obviously, there was a postponed game against Nottingham Forest in there as well. It's the first time since April 2017 Reading have recorded a third straight home win. If you had to point out one thing, Mark, that's dramatically changed between the end of the José Gomes era and the start of Mark Bowen's tenure, what would you say is the key area where Reading have improved?
Reading have just tightened up the defence, and I think the key factor behind that is that Jose's team were falling behind too often. I think his 7 of his last 8 games or something we fell behind in. And when you're, you know, 1-0 down, and it was usually quite early on, the entire ball game is a different sort of kettle of fish, really. You turn up against teams then who are quite happy to sit back and know that you aren't too dangerous in front of goal. And still at the moment, we still do need quite a few chances to score, like I suppose a lot of Championship teams. But now we're not doing it while a goal down. And with the defence being that little bit tighter, means that other players such as John Swift and Ovie Ejaria have a bit more freedom in their role. Games are a little bit more open, and certainly the Luton game on the weekend, we benefited from that and turned up with 3 goals.
What do you think in terms of what Mark Byrne might have done for the home crowd? As I mentioned, it was the first time since April 2017 that Reading have recorded a 3rd straight home. And when I've spoken to a few other Reading guests, there's been that feeling there's been a disconnect between the fans and the team, and perhaps attendance is down at the Medeski. Do you feel like one of the things Mark Byrne has done is he's connected the fans back with the club?
Well, funnily enough, that was something that a lot of fans felt Jose Gomez did. He was very well liked by a sort of majority of the fans as being very personable and being the sort of manager who, after every game, would be sure to credit the fans and stuff like that. Mark Byrne isn't that sort of manager. He doesn't necessarily, you know, make sure the first thing he says every week is that the fans have been brilliant. And to be honest, the disconnect between the club and the fans has largely come from the fact that we've not been very good. And when you start winning, when you have 3 home games and that you win in a row, it's remarkable how much more, no matter what the style, no matter what the personality of the manager, the fans will then feel, you know, the love of the players and vice versa. And it's always a lot better having players go and clap you at the end of a game with a win. And that's what we've had 3 games in a row now, which we hadn't had before.
One of the things Mark Byrne has pointed out is an emphasis on Reading's work off the ball, that it's important, obviously, what you do in possession, but highlighting the need for Reading to improve off it. Has that been very noticeable for you home fans, that Reading are working tirelessly without possession as well as with it?
I don't think we've not overnight become the sort of Liverpool-esque sort of team that is a high-pressing team and everything like that. We've got the 2 strikers are kind of polar opposites in that respect. George Puskas is probably, you know, a player that a lot of fans, when they've seen him on TV, has done very well. But generally speaking, off the ball, he's not going to chase down an awful lot. But we are playing alongside in Sam Baldock, who's been brought back into the team. And he is your classic sort of hustler, harrier sort of attacker off the ball who'll make a difference. And I suppose his inclusion in the team is the biggest example of us working harder off the ball. But generally, you know, coming back to the defence, we play a 3-5-2 system, and previously the wing-backs were just being caught miles up the pitch, and that stretched out the centre-backs as well. Now they're just being told to just calm it down a little bit. Everyone start from a more secure base, and therefore when opposition teams have the ball, we're already set up to defend rather than having to, you know, rush back and make it up as we go along.
And just finally then, Mark, Reading are starting to move away from the relegation zone, now 5 points above it. Is the key thing for Mark Byrne now over these next few games after the international break to get as far away as possible from it so that they can start looking forward and up the table rather than looking over their shoulder?
Yeah, definitely. Getting away from the relegation zone is obviously the priority at the moment, but it's more the sense that the 4 games that he's had so far, you know, Preston are doing very well, but their fans will say they didn't play well at all at the Medeski. We've played 2 teams at home who are in the bottom half of the table, gone to a QPR team again who were disappointed with their performance on the night. So the 4 games we've had so far haven't necessarily been the biggest tests yet. The 3 games coming up, however, Brentford away, Leeds at home, and then going to a tough place like Wigan, those, I imagine, are going to be bigger tests, and that's going to be the key thing. And for Byrne, yeah, getting away from the relegation zone is going to be the priority. But I don't suspect that we'll be coming out of those 3 games thinking, all right, here comes the playoff. But I think it'll still be a case of, you know, a bit of mid-table security and not having to worry about going down this year.
This is Love Sport.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I got one here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.